It is Wednesday, March the 29th, 2023, and if you are listening on the day that this is released, well, there's only one more sleep until opening day. Welcome to episode 82 of Toeing the Slab, Pitching with David Cone. It's pitching discussions every single week with the five-time World Series champ David Cone, the ace researcher James Smythe, and myself, Justin Shackle, producer Dan Rourke with us as well. And this is our 2023 season pitching preview episode. The season begins on Thursday, opening day. Ready to roll here in 2023. Let's get it on. David, James, how we doing, fellas?
Ready to go. Yes, let's bring it on. Gonna be a little chilly in the Bronx tomorrow. You know, a little windy, below 50 degrees, but should get some sunshine, so it should be decent.
I'm great. We are recording this on Wednesday morning at this time. Tomorrow, I'll be at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, we'll be in a ballpark, smelling all the smells, seeing all the great sights, and probably with, like David said, it's going to be sunny, but chilly, so we'll have our jackets on. Lots to get to as we approach opening day league-wide, but let's start with the opener, like we always do. We'll get right into it. David, what do you have for us opening up this week's episode?
Two things. One is Yogi. The Yogi documentary's out. It ain't over. It's great. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's Yogi Berra. I mean, you're going to laugh. You just never get tired of hearing about Yogi Berra. Just one of the great characters of all time. Supersedes baseball even. I mean, people know Yogi Berra, don't even know anything about baseball, but they know Yogi Berra. So that's how important he was in Americana history. And then secondly, with regards to baseball and all the rules changes, you know, we tend to talk about the pitch timer. Apparently Major League Baseball prefers pitch timer over pitch clock, as if that's a big deal or not. So the pitch timer is
make a note of that here.
Yes. The pitch timer. Yes. So yes, we know the ban of the shift, left-handed batters are in vogue. Is there going to be more stolen bases? We've covered this a lot in spring training, but I still think what's flown under the radar is the actual schedule itself. It's more of a balanced schedule this year. It deserves more attention than it's getting. I think overall, maybe the impact, I don't know. I think the Yankees will benefit from that. You know, you're not playing 19 times against Baltimore and Tampa and the Red Sox and the Blue Jays within your division as much. You're going to spread that out over the course of everybody. But I think the representative example of that is the Giants. Opening day, you got the San Francisco Giants in the Bronx. It's a great matchup. Good for fans all over baseball. Get to see Aaron Judge. Every fan base is going to have a chance to see the Yankees who travel well. But the balanced schedule, more of a balanced schedule this year, I think is a big deal. It's going to impact the game. I think Central Divisions may suffer just a bit. Well, it remains to be seen. It may be negligible at the end of the day, but it's really interesting that the scheduling changes for me are really interesting. I think it's part of a precursor to more change in the future that we're going to see for Major League Baseball in terms of schedules, realignment, potential expansion. This is the first step. Is a sort of a more balanced schedule.
I love the more balanced schedule, and I think it's really going to manifest itself longer term, where fans are going to see the big stars more often. And it's okay if, you know, if one team is playing in one ballpark one year, don't worry, they're coming back this year. So if everyone's facing the Angels this year, but only half of the interleague games are going to be at home against Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. But then next year they switch on and off. So every other year you're seeing everybody at your ballpark.
I love the access to the stars. I love that focal point with interleague play. It's a reason why I was able to see Barry Bonds at Yankee Stadium growing up. It's, you know, a matchup that doesn't come around often. So you're going to see more stars more often. And I think it adds a lot of emphasis to the games that you do have against some of your usual opponents. Just take the AL East, for example. Yankees, Blue Jays, Rays. It figures to be a very tight division. That division or the NL East, maybe the tightest divisions. Well, the games that you do have against Toronto or Tampa Bay, if you are the Yankees, for example, those are going to mean more. They're going to carry more weight. There's going to be extra punch there. And look, just glancing at the schedule here, first meeting for the Yankees either against the Rays or the Blue Jays doesn't come until May the 5th. So there's a little bit of time for some of their pitching injuries to right themselves and get a little bit more healthy before they play those very important games. I think that leads us into one of our first topics here. Guys, there are three mainstays atop the league's list of championship contenders, probably all within the top 5 to 7 teams if you wanted to rank squads around Major League Baseball. I'm talking about the Braves, the Yankees, and the Dodgers. They are all starting the season with makeshift rotations to varying degrees here. I'm wondering, which team's starting five to open the season are you most bullish on? And I could give you the rundown here. The Yankees are going to have a different rotation than they thought they were heading into spring training. Gerrit Cole at the top, Clark Schmidt, Johnny Brito, and then Nestor Cortez and Domingo Herman. The Dodgers with Clayton Kershaw, Julio Urias, Noah Syndergaard, Dustin May, and Ryan Pepiot, who won that fifth starter's job. And for the Braves, Max Fried, Spencer Strider, Jared Schuster, Charlie Morton, and Dylan Dodd. So which starting five are you most bullish on to open the season?
Well, I'd like to expand that a little bit. You know, certainly the starting five is important, but I think the reserves in depth, the best starting eight, I'll give to the Dodgers. And I mentioned this before because of who they have in waiting. Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone are two pitchers in waiting that are ready for the big leagues right now. I still think that the Dodgers and Kershaw and Urias, I think Dustin May coming back, that a lot of people are really excited about, electric stuff. I think Syndergaard's going to benefit from being on the Dodgers and a further year removed from his Tommy John surgery. Gonsolin's on the way back too, injured. But I look at those two young frontline starters in waiting, and they have unbelievable stuff. When you know, and the guys I mentioned before in terms of Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone are probably two of the best young pitching prospects that are ready for the big leagues right now, that are not in their rotation, that will be before the year's over or the next available spot. So I say the Dodgers.
I'm leaning towards the Braves just because it's a little more top heavy. Max Fried and Spencer Strider is probably the best 1-2 punch out of this whole group. Jared Schuster turned some heads this spring. I do find them. I'll take them in this, but I don't want to sleep on the Yankees either, because for all the gloom and doom in Yankee land around the pitching injuries, or hopefully shorter term. And Clark Schmidt, I really like this year.
Same here. I'm a big believer in Clark Schmidt having a breakout season, but I'm going to go with the Braves as well. The thing that has me, I guess, wanting to watch the Braves rotation is that, yeah, it's not at full strength, but you could potentially see that the pitchers who are filling the rotation right now be the guys that are there at the end, or maybe at the start of the postseason. You have Jared Schuster, former first round pick, Dodd's a third round pick. The replacements they have for some of their injured players like Kyle Wright, and I'm assuming they're waiting for Mike Soroka to build himself up at full strength as he makes a long awaited comeback. Like it feels like this is just another crop of talented young arms that are being cycled through. We saw what happened with Spencer Strider, took a spot, broke out in a big way as a rookie. I can foresee guys like Schuster and Dodd being there at the end, the entire way. Who knows? They may never leave the rotation. So that's why I'm most intrigued with the Braves rotation. This is something that we didn't cover in past week's episode. And I'm wondering, because he is a name that people know here. Ian Anderson was sent to AAA during spring training for the Braves. You think he can, recapture some of that promise that we saw a couple of years ago with Atlanta, or is he maybe a prime example of a guy who could use a change of scenery?
It's an interesting point. You know, we've talked here on our podcast about the three different ways to get hitters out, pitching philosophies. You know, there's east and west, paint, corners, north and south, riding action up above the zone, up the ladder, and then there's sort of front to back. And the Ian Anderson is a front to back pitcher, kind of a fastball changeup guy, a timing disruptor, so to speak. The problem is that when you lose a little on the top end, and then the changeup the margin between the fastball and the changeup kind of closes a little bit. And then therefore the potential to lose a little effectiveness because of that front to back style of pitching that he is kind of loses a little bit. So he needs to make the adjustment in AAA and maybe, come up with a cutter, a third pitch, something a little better that complements that front to back style, maybe the east and west style of pitching, where he can, find a way to incorporate that into his game, can be a big influence on him and help him get back to the big leagues, because his changeup is great. his front to back style is great when it's on, but when it's off, it's kind of an all or nothing. When it's off, it becomes a problem.
Never want to say it's too late. He's still only 24. And this was a kid who had a fantastic run in his first two seasons, 2020 and 2021. 30 starts across the two seasons with a 3.25 ERA. And he was great in the postseason, both years, 20 and 21. A 1.26 ERA in 8 playoff games. That just can't fly out the window all of a sudden, can it?
I don't think so. But we'll see what he's able to do at AAA. Opening day matchups, they were all released last week. We'll probably, off the top of my head, obviously see Max Fried starting for the Braves on opening day. But which pitching matchups do you think is the juiciest on opening day, guys?
I'm going to go last because I have 6 of them circled. So I'll just take whichever ones you don't.
Yes. Well, old bull and the young bull. The old bull and the young bull is the best matchup in my mind. That is Sandy versus Max. I mean, and Max has been great spring training, punched out 11 guys. I mean, he just shows no signs of slowing down at all. So it's Max Scherzer against Sandy Alcantara. And it's, you know, to me, that is, you know, two horses. You know, Sandy's also going to be my pick for another award at the end of the year, probably later on in this broadcast. I love Sandy. He is a young bull that's just ready to just take it to the next level. Innings eater. Max is Max. He's a Hall of Famer in waiting. So Max versus Sandy.
All right, let me prefix that by saying that was my most juiciest pitching matchup for sure. But I also think that you have a great late night matchup in the Pacific Northwest, Framber Valdez against Dylan Cease. Those are two pitchers who finished in the top 5 in Cy Young voting last year. I think both are going to build off their impressive 2022 seasons. Cease, strikeout machine. He's facing a tough lineup right out of the chute, even without Jose Altuve. Give me Valdez and Cease. That game is actually happening in Houston, so they're opening in Houston. So not as late as we think, but still a night game. Valdez and Cease. That's my pick.
All right, so this is a pretty good third pick in my book. 4 o'clock, Phillies-Rangers, Aaron Nola against Jacob DeGrom, two of the best pitchers in baseball, and you got the extra juice of Jacob DeGrom making his Rangers debut. So many great games on tap for Thursday. You could just turn on the game at 1 o'clock with Giants-Yankees, Logan Webb and Garrett Cole, and go all the way past midnight on the East Coast. Webb and Cole, Nola, DeGrom, Max and Sandy, as Coney brought up. Shaq, you got Cease and Valdez at 7 o'clock. Then two games out west that I have my eye on. Diamondbacks, Dodgers, Zach Gallen against Julio Urias, and Cleveland, Seattle, Shane Bieber and Luis Castillo. Those are 6 that I had circled. And then that's not even counting games where Max Fried is going to pitch, Corbin Burns is going to pitch, Shane McClanahan, Alek Manoah, and oh yeah, Shohei Ohtani. Opening day is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I think I said Seattle earlier because I was looking at my alternate pick there, and I definitely had the Mariners Guardians matchup with Castillo and Bieber. But this is why I think opening day, people say don't make such a big deal out of rosters or what the lineup looks like on opening day. For if you're a big fan of pitching, this is one of the best days of the season because you have Goliath versus Goliath in almost every matchup. You have ace versus ace squaring off. So this is a very, very exciting day if you are pitching fanatics, for sure.
Pitchers too, by the way. Excuse me, Shaq, for the pitchers too. I mean, what an honor to be the opening day pitcher.
Very true.
My memories, plus all the fanfare. Everybody comes back, all the former players. I remember opening up again for the Mets against the Cardinals and looking over the Cardinals dugout and Bob Gibson staring at me. You know, eyeing me up and down. I mean, that kind of feeling is just that you just never, it stays with you forever. You never forget that opening day feeling because everybody's there. You know, a couple nights later, it's a night game and half the fans are there. It's not the same, but opening day, nothing like it.
I don't think we're going to see so much heat being thrown with the first game of the season. Everyone probably still trying to build themselves back up, but you never know. But it leads me to the next question here. We saw Twins reliever Johan Duran throw 5 of the fastest pitches in 2022, and that included the fastest at 103.2 miles an hour last season. Are you taking Johan Duran or the field for the fastest pitch thrown in 2023?
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, that's actually a pretty good handicap right there. Pretty good question. I'm going to take the field, I think, on that one, even though it's closer than you think. You know, you just go to St. Louis. You have two guys there, Jordan Hicks and Ryan Helsley, that can easily do that. Andres Munoz in Seattle, among other young kids coming up. We saw a couple of them in the WBC that certainly could do it. For perspective here, and I know James would be into this, there were 56 pitchers last year with a minimum of 10 appearances that averaged 97 miles an hour plus or higher on their fastballs. 56. 98 plus 25 pitchers last year. And that includes relievers and starters. 99 plus, there were 9 pitchers last year, almost 10. One was just under, 90, I think 98.9, 99 miles an hour or more. 9 pitchers average. That was their average fastball last year. And 100 miles an hour or plus, there were three pitchers that average was that high or better.
Wow. You know, I love Johan Duran. And that's a great question, Shaq. I'm going to take the field just to highlight some of these other guys. Coney mentioned the two guys in St. Louis. I love Camilo Duval in San Francisco. Andres Munoz, I think, is my pick in Seattle. Coney, you brought him up before, but the heat in this game is off the charts, and it's going higher every year. And you wonder why strikeouts keep going up every year for the last decade plus. If you compare fastball velocity from 2008 to today, there are over about 2.5 times as many pitchers averaging 93. There's more than triple the amount of pitchers averaging 95. And there's 6 or 7 times as many pitchers averaging 97 plus. So that when we look back, you know, there's the dead ball era and all these things throughout the history of the game, as there's ebbs and flows. This early 2000s, as we get into the middle part of the century, will go down as the velocity era to me.
And because of that, James, I think more are on the way, and that's why I'm going to be taking the field. Because if you think about this time last year, pitchers like Duran, pitchers like Helsley, largely were not on the radars of everyone in baseball. So I think there's always going to be another name that comes into this space. So I'm taking the field. Not too many people knew who Johan Duran even was last year. So the likelihood of another hard throwing reliever, whether it's against someone we know or not, could just as easily take this crown next season. I'm going with the field as well. Clean sweep right there. How about we do this? Surprise pitching staff for 2023. So that encompasses rotation, bullpen, maybe not the best pitching staff, but what's a staff that may open up some eyes?
Well, there's one that's rebuilt, and James brought this up, a great opening day matchup. You're going to see Jacob DeGrom make his debut. But when you look at Texas, and it's everybody's pick to kind of bounce back, you know, they underachieved last year, the run prevention, run scored, the record should have been better. If you look at Pythagorean theorem and things like that, DeGrom, Eovaldi, Perez, Heaney as your fifth starter too. Now to me, it goes deeper. You guys have heard me say this. I look at the top 10 starters in any organization. Texas could hinge. The Rangers could hinge on a couple of recent draft picks. Our buddy Al Leiter's son, Jack Leiter, and Kumar Rocker, two of the best pitchers in college a couple of years ago at Vanderbilt, are in their minor league system developing. I don't know if they're ready just yet, but how they develop this year could be really important for the future of the Rangers and their rotation. And actually, there's one guy they have, a prospect that's ahead of those two guys. Owen White might be the first one called up in terms of the next in line. So they have three really frontline starter stuffed prospects that are going to go a long way this year, depending on how they perform in the minor leagues and how soon they can get to the big leagues. So my underrated staff, the rebuilt Texas Rangers with those three top prospects in waiting.
All right, and Brock Burke is fantastic in their bullpen, and they added Will Smith too. So not just the rotation adds, they also bolstered the bullpen a little bit there too. I'm going with the San Francisco Giants. They lose Carlos Rodon, but you still have Logan Webb, an ace. Alex Cobb maybe flew under the radar because the Giants were a 500 team. He had his best season since 2017. I like the additions of Sean Manaea and Ross Stripling. The Farhan Zaidi Giants have this, you know, reclamation project thing going on. Kevin Gausman, Drew Pomeranz, Alex Wood, Cobb now. So maybe they have a bit of a bounce back too. And then you go into the bullpen. You have the identical twins. Taylor and Tyler Rogers are reunited. Mentioned Doval earlier in the show. And I think the Giants, and they're in a great pitcher's park too. So that helps.
Yeah, I expect the Giants to make a little bit more noise than they did last year. Kind of an in-between season between what we saw in 2021 and 2022. Pitching is going to play a large part there. Let me emphasize this. My pick is a staff that may not light the world on fire and lead to wins for their team, but I think they have the potential to surprise by the way they grow and improve. And if I'm right, I'm going to look kind of smart. So I am going to take the Washington Nationals as my surprise pitching staff. You have a lot of young promising arms in the starting staff. Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore, Cade Cavalli. They're kind of all learning to pitch and have learned some hard pitching lessons at the big league level. Wondering if they can take those experiences, start to run with them a little bit. If they do, I think that puts the Nationals in a spot where they have a nice pitching foundation. Trevor Williams, who we saw move back and forth with the Mets between the bullpen and the rotation last year, he signed a two-year deal to be a starter in Washington. Kind of want to see how he performs with a normal routine, not bouncing back and forth. I like Hunter Harvey in relief. They have some other young bullpen arms, Mason Thompson, Kyle Finnegan, Carl Edwards. They all had pretty decent 2022 seasons, names that you may have heard of from the past, but they're kind of all coming together in the Nationals bullpen that's trying to figure out what works. I think the Nationals, again, may not light the world on fire in the standings, but by the end of the season, we may be saying that Washington has a nice pitching core that they can kind of build from.
High risk, high reward pick from Shaq. I like it.
Yeah, from the top rope, Shaq. I like it. Definitely.
If you're going to go big, why not go with something that you could be totally off on and no one really calls you out on? So I'll go with Washington Nationals there.
Well, people were probably, if you said that about the Orioles last year, people might have laughed at you, and they had a good year.
For sure. So we'll go with surprise picks to something that probably will be chalk talk at this moment. Cy Young picks, so guys, we've already reached that portion of the show. Who will be your Cy Young Award winner in the National and the American League this season?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to go too far out on a reach here in the National League. I'm going to pick Sandy, Alcantara. He's an easy pick. Everybody's favorite. Everything about him, I love. His personality, his presence on the mound, his obvious stuff. He wants it, his desire, the year he's coming off of. He's probably going to lead the league at innings pitched again. To me, it's one of the most important categories in today's game. So very few starters can throw 200 innings anymore. The residual effect that has on the entire staff and the bullpen in particular is more than you think it is. So yes, it's Sandy. Sandy in the National League, and actually in the American League, I think, you know, it's a safe pick and maybe a little bit of a homer pick. But you know, I think that Gerrit Cole is going to have a bounce back year in terms of keeping the ball in the ballpark. The home run, you know, even though he had a great strikeout year, he did what he normally does. His WAR, his overall numbers were down, I think, in large part due to the home run ball that he gave up last year. We've heard about Meredith Wills and the versions of baseballs that were used in Yankee Stadium last year. Potentially the ball that flies was more in Yankee Stadium last year than some of the other baseballs. That's, if you believe in conspiracy theories, I mean, she has pretty good data to back that up. So I love Meredith Wills. She's talked about the different types of baseballs. I think, you know, I don't know if that had an impact on Aaron Judge and his home run total overall, but it could, if it's true, it could have had an impact on the home runs Gerrit Cole gave up too overall. So I think he's going to bounce back, keep the ball in the ballpark more often, and he's still going to be a strikeout machine. He's still going to throw 200 innings. I think the two preemptive horses in the game, durable horses, you don't worry about these guys. You don't worry about injuries. You book 200 strikeouts, you book 200 innings. It's Sandy and it's Garrett.
Can't go wrong with either of those picks. Sandy would be the first back-to-back winner since Jacob DeGrom in 2018 and 19. And Cole, you have the baseline of innings and you know the quantity is going to be there and it's always going to be quality. Last year's bad year was still a 3.5 ERA and there was some home runs per fly ball funniness there. And so even if, you know, that balances out a little bit, that ERA should jump down. I'll push back on the Aaron Judge thing though. His shortest home run of last season out of the 62 was 355 feet. So he didn't have any wall scrapers there. Going to my Cy picks, I'm going to go with Dylan Cease in the American League. He made a great run going for the Cy last year. I think he gets over the top this year. He was second in the voting last year behind Justin Verlander. And he had a 6.4 WAR, which on Baseball Reference was actually higher than Verlander, 184 innings, 227 strikeouts, and a 2.20 ERA. He made 32 starts. He posted every game. I think he's going to be a rock for the White Sox. And in the National League, I'm going to go with Aaron Nola. Aaron Judge cashed in after betting on himself. I think Aaron Nola does the same and has a big year for the Phils. He's been in the Cy Young balloting a few times over these last few years. He was third in 2018, but Jacob DeGrom had an unbelievable year. He got Cy Young votes in 2020. He was fourth last season, a 205 inning year, 3.25 ERA. He was fourth for the Cy. I say he gets over the hump this year and that it's Cease and Nola for my Cy Young picks.
I like him. And I'm going to stay in the NL East with my Cy Young pick. I'm going Max Fried to the Braves. I think he's continuing to build a fascinating contract case and adding to this narrative between he and the Braves. And I think this season will add on to that. I think he has all the tools to do it, gives up the soft contact, seems to be the leader for a very talented staff, like we discussed earlier. I think he could crack 200 innings for the first time this season. The trajectory continues to move in that direction. He's my pick in the National League this year. And I'm with David here. Gerrit Cole, if not now, when, right? Like, are we really going to see Gerrit Cole not win a Cy Young? I don't think so. I love the desire to be great. You could say that about a lot of pitchers. So maybe there's some bias here because you see it up close in New York with what we do. Strikeout machine, eats innings. I think it all revolves around what David was talking about. If he can minimize damage on the home runs allowed, I think he will be right there in the end. But we all have our NL picks coming out of the Eastern Division. Like, would we, would you guys bet your hard-earned cash that the Cy Young Award pick would come out of the NL East? Or like, if you had to take the NL East or the field, which way are you going?
I would probably take the field on that, you know, just because, you know, I think that the scheduling is going to make a difference, especially down the stretch. So yeah, it's the, whoever's in the NL West, you know, there's going to be less games against each other. So yeah, whether that's, you know, Arias, who I think has a chance to, you know, that he would be a guy I would really follow because he, just to his track record, how tough he is, his presence on the mound. There's something about Julio Arias with the Dodgers. It might be his time. He's now the number one guy, opening day starter. Yeah, I would take the field on that.
Good question, Shaq. But you know what? I know the prudent thing to do would be to take the field because it's the field. But as far as getting value for one division, so you're saying, so I get Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer from the Mets. I get Max Fried and Spencer Strider from the Braves. I get Sandy. I get Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola from the Phillies. Sign me up.
Yeah. Nine pitchers right off the bat that you can make an argument who have a legit case to win the Cy Young Award this season. I'll go with the East for sure. I'll pin my bet against the NL East.
We're going to change my vote.
Well, when James like rattles them off like that, yeah, right off the top of your head, if seems like it's easy, definitely a lot more difficult, but yeah, I think it has the most talented crop of starting pitching out of any division in baseball, the NL East. We'll make our World Series picks in a few moments. Let's move over to some Yankee chatter here, because there is a big shift, in my opinion, that happened over the weekend. You could call it a new era, call it whatever you want, but Anthony Volpe's addition to the opening day lineup was made official. The Yankees added him, and he's going to be the starting shortstop for the New York Yankees on 2023 opening day. I'm wondering here, is this a special? Is it like an isolated case involving a really talented player, or is this an example of how some of the new CBA incentives, like you were talking about in past episodes, David, are influencing teams like the Yankees and how they could possibly operate with their young blue chip prospects moving forward?
Well, Anthony Volpe is not the only example. Jordan Walker with St. Louis is another example in the exact same boat. So, and St. Louis had viable alternatives in their outfield. It wasn't like they were short on outfield depth. So they certainly felt like he broke through. Like Anthony Volpe broke through. They had the Yankees, both teams had alternatives. So with that being said, how much value do you place on a compensation pick, a draft pick at the end of the first round? Now, the last time, but one of the most important compensation picks the Yankees ever got was when Nick Swisher was a free agent and the Yankees got an end of the first round pick and they got Aaron Judge out of that pick. So draft picks have gone up in value over the last two decades. Organizations value them so much more now. So what is that value? So you get, not only do you get Anthony Volpe, who would be something that you need obviously on your team, and his all around talent is what broke him through, the all around ball player that he brings to the table. But at the end of the day, Anthony Volpe finishes in the top three of the rookie of the year voting. Huge plus, huge feather in the cap for the Yankees. And oh yeah, by the way, he's going to bring back an end of the first round pick for you. So that's kind of enticing, I think, you know. And It did it sway the Yankees? Only Brian Cashman can ask that. It's not nothing, that's for sure. It's something. I think it matters. And so far, so good on service manipulation and the new rules in the CBA. We'll see how it goes on down the road. We're going to need a much bigger sample size, but two pretty good examples this year.
It's another tool in the toolbox, as Cash might say. If you credit to the Cards and Yanks for doing this, I guess it'll take a few years to really get a grip on, you know, is this a trend throughout the game? Are these isolated incidents? We'll see, but hats off to Volpe for making the team. I got egg on my face. I was preaching patience all spring, and he just grabbed that shortstop job right out of Oswald Peraza's hands. So good for Volpe, good for the Yankees. He could provide a spark right out of the gate here in April. But as far as, you know, rookie of the year possibilities, it's not just about April. So whether, you know, Adley Rutschman, he, in most years, he's rookie of the year, and he didn't come up till May. Julio Rodriguez, the actual AL rookie of the year, had a very rough introduction last April. He had a 205 average, a 544 OPS, and a strikeout rate just under 40% in the first month of the season, and then he took off. So I preach patience in spring as far as, you know, Volpe's development and the possibility of him starting in AAA. I'm going to preach patience to the fan base where don't freak out if he's not a superstar right out of the gate. It's a long season.
Yeah, I was with you. Wrong as well. I thought some extra seasoning at AAA would only help Anthony Volpe. But as far as this question goes, I think it definitely influences teams. And I tell you what, I was more on the fence before this morning. There is an awesome article in the New York Post from Ian O'Connor talking about a sit-down dinner that the Volpe family had with Jim Hendry, who's a special advisor to Brian Cashman, former Cubs GM, happened before they drafted him. And I can't help but think, if Anthony Volpe has the year that a lot of Yankee fans are hoping for, where he is finishing in the top three rookie of the year, and the Yankees do get that late first round draft pick, this allows a team like the Yankees, who doesn't pick at the top of the draft board very often, to sort of go out and find that other Anthony Volpe, meaning a top flight amateur talent who may have his sights set on going to college. They have that chance to pick that player, take the risk, and kind of convey them. In this case, it mattered a lot to Anthony Volpe, Jersey kid, grew up in a Yankee fan family. Jim Hendry's message to him at that point when he was a high school senior was like, look, if you go to college, this is pretty much your only chance of becoming a Yankee. So if that matters to you, when you go to Vanderbilt and you excel, and in 3 years, you're going to be in a situation and in a place on a draft board where we're not going to be able to touch because we're not picking that high. So obviously it's a unique circumstance, but you can convey to a talent, look, if you want to be with us, if that matters to you at all, the time's now, because we're not going to be in a position to be able to draft you later. We can give you the money you want now as a first round talent, but this is probably your only opportunity to do so. And I think that does carry weight with an organization like the Yankees. It may carry weight with some of the other premier franchises as well, but I do think it influences teams like the Yankees, maybe like the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Braves, where they're picking potentially low at the draft board, and you can sit down with that premier talent and let them know, like, hey, this is what the deal is. And it allows them to kind of cycle through that system again, pick another Anthony Volpe per se.
I'm glad you brought that up, Shaq, because that was a great article. If you haven't seen it, check it out. But it just shows you the value of somebody like a Jim Hendry behind the scenes, that Brian Cashman, who I've said on here before, who his claim, you know, the thing he told me a couple of years ago was that he feels like he hires very well, surrounds himself with the best people he can find. We saw it this last offseason with Brian Sabian and, you know, others along the way too, as well. Some baseball people, lifers. Jim Hendry's one of those guys, Omar Minaya in that category as well. Jim Hendry was a college coach at Creighton. He's a baseball guy, right? And so it's a situation where, you know, the Yankees, the perception of the Yankees behind the scenes is that they're very analytically driven, and they're the team, that's the department that's driving the bus. And yeah, they have a great analytics department. I've learned a lot from talking to those guys. I think they're fantastic, but they have great baseball people too. Tim Nehring, Jim Hendry, right at the top of the list, credibility wise, to have that conversation as a coach of college at Creighton University, to give the college experience that was pointed out in that article. And then obviously pointing out to Anthony Volpe, hey, this is your chance to be a Yankee. How important is that to you? And a very honest, direct approach. The really great article behind the scenes. Jim Hendry deserves a lot of credit.
Well said, guys. And I'm glad you said that, because I hate the straw man about, you know, everyone mocks the Yankees and analytics as if they're the only team that uses it. All 30 teams do this, and all 30 teams have scouting departments. The whole analytics versus scouts war is just garbage from 20 years ago. That stuff is over. So let's all move on and not mock analytics as if the Yankees are trying to reinvent the wheel here.
And I know it's early in the season, obviously. I think the Anthony Volpe news may have blanketed the biggest concern for this Yankees team at the end of spring training. And as we begin opening day, we touched on it earlier in the episode, there are massive injuries to the starting rotation. Whether or not they're going to be long injuries or short injuries, right now the pitching rotation is not what everyone mapped it out to be in the winter or at the very start of spring training. So I want to ask you guys this, and I want to ask Dan Rourke this as well from a fan's perspective, because I saw him not worried one bit when some of these injuries came about. Is it more or less concerning that the starting pitching depth will be tested at the very start of the season? What do you guys think?
I'll defer to our resident Yankee fan. Dan, what do you think? Give us all some emotion. Yes.
Yeah, so I know some people consider me to be like the most optimistic Yankee fan of all time. I just think I'm being rational. And some of these takes from people in the community that I love and respect dearly, but I wonder if they've ever watched a baseball season before, because this is something I expect to happen. You're going to use, what, 8, 9, 10 pitchers, starting pitchers in a year. And the Sebi concern I get, me personally, I'm kind of, I don't want to say I'm out on him, but I have kind of changed my stance of, you know, injury every single year. Maybe I don't want to sign him long term. However, as for the Yankee rotation right now this year, Rodon is already throwing a 30-pitch bullpen. He's expected to be back in 2 weeks. So I don't look at it as the end of the world when you're going to have, essentially, in April, three of the top 10, top 15-ish starting pitchers in the American League pitching for you, in Cole, Nestor, and Rodon. Clark and Domingo, we were expecting, at least once the Montas news happened, that he'd probably be a factor, or they'd be a factor no matter what. And Johnny Brito, I understand he's not flashy. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but nasty changeup, ground ball rate is insane. He had a pretty damn good spring. Like, I think a 2 ERA, 5 1/3, no hit innings against the Blue Jays. And also in the minor leagues last year, he was good. 2.96 ERA in like 26 starts between Triple and Double A. And all that, we probably just have to get by with a month for him. So even if he isn't all that good, it's only what, 4 or 5 starts maybe. And then worst case scenario, if Sebi doesn't come back, which is still possible, you know, end of April, who knows? You can always upgrade at the deadline. I still think the Yankees are more than good enough to win the AL East. That has kind of been my sentiment this whole time, is good enough to get by until the deadline. And that's where you get the piece to get you over the hump, the Astros. And I don't think, you know, having a couple of young pitchers make a couple starts in April is going to change that. So that's where I'm at with it.
I like it. You know, the voice of reason. Wow. Out of nowhere. Yes. I like it. No, they'll be tested. You know, there is no doubt that the Yankees have had a run of bad luck, or what to call it, whatever you want, going back to the Montas trade. A lot of their depth, their young pitching depth, was traded away. Hayden Wesneski looked really good at the end of the Cubs rotation, made it out of spring training. He'd be a nice guy to have back. And Ken Waldichuk out in Oakland, JP Sears, they lost 3 potential starters to trades that haven't worked out. So that stinks. There's no doubt about it. I mean, nobody's got a crystal ball. The Yankees make the best decisions you can at the time, trying to go for it, trying to win. Players came back, they got hurt, or they were hurt, or whatever. Maybe you go back and quality check your process in that point. How do we make these decisions? That's valid. But with that being said, Yankees are short. There's no two ways about it. Johnny Brito is kind of it. Randy Vasquez looked pretty good too in spring training. I'm not sure if he's quite ready. He's next in line. Beyond that, you're on the scrap heap. So you're down to really 6 starters, viable starters right now that are on the roster that you could call somebody up right now. And Randy Vasquez is the next one in line that's on the roster. So yes, they're looking for guys without a doubt. And the next in line, you know, if you're in the Yankee system, opportunity's knocking. Right now, you're the next kid in line. You pitched in Double A last year. Hey, you're knocking on the door already. And that's kind of rare for the Yankees. The Yankees aren't known to be that kind of organization. So there's no two ways about it. The Yankees are short right now. Dan's right. Carlos Rodon's on the way back. Hopefully Sevy is too. But in the depth department, it's a little worrisome right now. And that can be rectified at the trade deadline. The Yankees have pieces to trade. They have great prospects.
So, I will definitely recognize the depth is an issue for sure. So if you have, say, one more injury happen, which, you know, baseball, it probably will, then kind of in some trouble. But just looking at the starting five of right now, Cole, Schmidt, Nestor, Herman, Brito, I don't think that's like something to where it's going to cause a season to fall into the cellar. Like some fans are kind of putting it out there. I recognize that. Definitely need some depth though, for sure.
It is more concerning that they're being tested already, because there's 162 games left rather than 40 or 80 or 100. That said, these are hopefully shorter term. It's not like Rodon is out for the season right now. So just a little take a step back. The rotation on March 29th or April 8th is not what the rotation is on May 1st or later in the season or in October. So patience. And it's a long season. If Rodon makes 24 starts instead of 32, not a big deal. If Severino, he was just fine last year making 19 starts. The hope was that he was going to make a few more. If he makes 19 again, he's very good on a pitch-for-pitch basis. So a little slow the roll a little bit as far as panic for the Yankees right now.
Yeah, it's a mix of both for me. I think you don't want to start off the season on an unhealthy note like this. We saw what being healthy did for this team last year. They were off to a terrific start. They drew comparisons to 1998. All that had to do largely with them being healthy. I do not think it's the end of the world though, because it seems like a lot of these injuries are short term. But in the case of Luis Severino, and I know it's a different area in the lat, but the lat issue continues to pop up. And Dan, you kind of mentioned it right when you came on with Severino. I don't want to say people are over him, so to speak, but this is another reason why you may have to question whether or not Luis Severino's long-term value lies within the starting rotation. Should the bullpen be something that could be in Severino's future?
the valid point. I think the question is that because they need the starters is the problem. So even if you wanted to and say, you know what, Severino's at this point with the injury history might be better suited for the bullpen, but you don't have the backup right now. You need him to be a starter. You know, one wild card to follow in the Yankees minor league system, former top prospect David Garcia, actually looked pretty good in spring training. I'm not sure what his future holds, whether he's more of a reliever, multi-inning reliever guy, or if he can reignite his starting rotation prospects or not. But he's a little bit of a wild card for the Yankees. But with respect to Severino, yeah, if he had more depth, if the Yankees get healthy again all of a sudden, or if they make a trade to add to their depth, then maybe down the stretch run, Severino could be a wild card in the bullpen. It's a valid question.
I think it's too soon for that, but it is something you could think about down the line. I think he's still far too valuable as a starter at this point.
What do you think, Dan?
I think if the bullpen, I'm not concerned about the bullpen, even with the injuries, if it were like that was an area of need and also the pitching was an area of strength, then I think it might make a little more sense. But while I said all that about not being concerned about the rotation, just how I feel about Severino, when he comes back, like having him in the rotation, if he's healthy, then you kind of ascend to like an even better tier of being like one of the top teams in the American League if he's healthy. So I don't know like the medical side of all this stuff, so I don't really want to comment on it. Me as a fan, what I want to see, if he's healthy, I want to see him in the rotation.
Yeah, I love the energy he brings as a starter for his own well-being. I don't know if we've reached that point yet. Probably say we haven't, but perhaps his future long-term lies in the bullpen.
He definitely would be fired too. Remember that 1 year in like his second year, 2016, where he struggled as a starter and they ended up putting out the pen? He was money, so I think he would definitely be good, yeah.
All right, before we get to our World Series picks, one last Yankee item, and I want to hear from each of you here. The main thing that you are watching, the main thing you're watching for with the 2023 New York Yankees will be what?
Well, you know, there's some players that they're looking to bounce back. Obviously, you look at third base, what's Josh Donaldson do? You know, the shortstop situation, you know, Volpe kind of answered the question. You know, they're going to go with him out of the gate. Does Glaber get off to a good start? Does he become a trade prospect at the halfway point or not? But to me, it still comes down to the outfield. How does the outfield shake out? You know, there's still a lot of the biggest uncertainty other than the starting rotation and the depth is the outfield position. Is Aaron Judge going to play center now again? Is he going to play left field? How much can Stanton play in right? Does Aaron Hicks bounce back? Is Oswaldo Cabrera a true left fielder? Is Brian Reynolds still a potential trade at the deadline? Who's involved in that? What do you got to give up? Do you got to give up a Jason Dominguez to get an outfielder like a Brian Reynolds? To me, how the outfield shakes out, you know, including Harrison Bader and his health coming back, to me is the biggest question mark for the Yankees is what's the best outfield and what's it going to look like and when are they going to get to it?
Boring answer from Smythe coming, but health, health, health. Every aspect of the team, starting pitching, what are you going to get out of Rodon and Severino? Bullpen, how does Michael King bounce back? When does someone like Lou Trevino enter the fray? Infield, how healthy is DJ LeMahieu? Outfield, when does Bader get back? How many games can Giancarlo Stanton play in the outfield? All encompassing, the roster that the Yankees have is a championship caliber team. Can they actually be playing at the same time for the most part to get that?
I'm going to go with not just Volpe generically, but with him, Oswaldo Cabrera, the added youth energy and the speed. There was a clip the other day that I'm not sure if you guys caught the game on Monday. It was Volpe on second, Rizzo at the dish, where you just see Volpe hopping off, dancing around. You see the pitcher looking back and forth at him. And it makes me think all the time of the Jackie Robinson scene in the 42 movie where he's bouncing off third base, pitcher's getting distracted. He ends up balking, but Jackie scores, of course. And the lady goes, well, what happened? And the kid goes, he discombobulated the man. And I think we're going to see a lot of that from Volpe this year to where like the pressure he has on the base paths could be create like a more exciting brand of Yankee baseball. Same with as well, the Cabrera, obviously, you know, he's not like as fast as Volpe or anything like that. Just the overall like different style of play we might see having these guys in there. So that's what I'm going to go with. Kind of generic, I know, but that specifically.
No, I like it. I think he could be the only player who can deliver those skills at that level. So I think it's very important there.
And from a macro perspective in all of MLB, how high is the stolen base rate going to be? How many more attempts per game are we going to see teams try? And Volpe's a part of that on the Yankee side.
Mm-hmm. And how many at-bats Oswaldo Cabrera gets? Under the radar, great spring training, got some pop, especially at Yankee Stadium, that left-handed bat. It'd be really interesting to see where he, how he shakes out, because he can play everywhere. He wants to catch next. He's just a remarkable young kid. He's my favorite by far, just his personality, the way he handles himself. Everybody loves him. How many at-bats can he get, and what does he do with that? And how's Aaron Boone handle Oswaldo Cabrera? Really interesting.
One more thing on Waller that's interesting too is Boone said he considers him still an infielder. So I'm wondering, who is the backup shortstop on the day Volpe gets off? Is it Waldo? And then, you know, as we speak right now, IKF's still on the roster. So I'm just curious how that could work out too, you know?
Yeah.
Good point. For me, I am going to be hyper-focused on every time Gerrit Cole or Carlos Rodon takes the mound. They are billed as two of the best strike throwers, strikeout artists in the game. I think it was massive that the Yankees backed Cole up with a talent like Carlos Rodon. I am going to be fascinated by watching them and seeing if they can deliver to that level that everyone's expecting of them the entire season, where they are going to be at the end of the season, heading into the postseason. So those are the two players and the biggest thing I'm watching out for. And to answer the outfield question, I'm going to make a bold statement here, David, because you mentioned outfield very is a question mark for you. I think on October 1st in Kansas City, final regular season game, you're going to see Jason Dominguez and Anthony Volpe in the same lineup for the New York Yankees.
Bold. As a September call-up, Dominguez, or you think he gets up sooner?
Oof. Oh, haven't thought that deep. But
yeah, I mean, you think he's the answer, though, in left field this year?
Yeah,
at some point.
At some point this year.
It's interesting. All eyes are on him right now. They definitely are. And we've seen guys jump from Double A to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Anthony Volpe is essentially doing that. Jordan Walker's essentially doing that. We've seen it in the past. So I saw a couple of young pitchers for the Royals do that. Brett Saberhagen and Mark Gubiza in 1984 did that. The next year they won the World Series. So you can jump from Double A to the big leagues. So Dominguez could certainly do that.
All right, we've reached the end here. World Series picks, have to make them. I mean, we're a podcast. We talk about sports. What are we at the beginning of a season without a World Series prediction? Dan, what do you have?
I'll make my pick and then get out of here. Yankees.
Well, the thing is that I'm a big believer that you gotta beat the champion. You gotta knock out the champ. And it's Houston is still the champ, and that they say what you want about the history of the Astros, everything that's gone on there, all the controversy, they've backed it up. You know, they looked the demon right in the face. Whether you think they handled all that stuff in 2017 well or not, in 2019, that's a great core group of players. And missing Altuve for the first 2 months is a big hit for them, you know, with his broken thumb from the WBC, but he will be back. Verlander's a bigger loss than you think it is, I believe, even though they have a tremendous depth in their pitching. But until you beat Houston in the American League, they're the team to beat. And in the National League, I think this is the year that the Padres break through. So right now, for me, until the Yankees prove they can beat the Astros, it's Houston and the Padres in the World Series. Who wins that one? Wow. I'm going to go with the Padres.
First time title for San Diego. I think the Yankees, with a Cole, Rodon, Cortez, Severino quartet, would be their best postseason rotation in ages. I'm going with the Yankees over the Padres in six games. Party like it's 1998, Coney.
Nice. All right.
Commemorate the 25th anniversary right there for 1998. I was very tempted to do the same, but I'm going with Yankees and Braves. And if I'm going to be objective at this moment in time, right now, I will say that the Braves win it. But please prove me wrong. I welcome that. I want to be wrong here in this pick. But I think, again, Volpe adds a different dimension to the Yankee lineup. What have we been saying the last few seasons? Things need to change for the Yankees offense, especially come October, to try and get over the hump. I think this provides that a little bit of change. I think you see bounce backs from a couple of faces. And like I said a few minutes ago, I think Jason Dominguez some way, somehow makes his way onto this team and adds another wrinkle to the youthfulness within the Yankees offense. I think the pitching has been extraordinary the last 2 years. I think it continues. They find a way to be very good. And I think they do get over the hump here, but the Braves, as constituted for me, it's a sixth straight National League East title. They win the pennant, and I think they'll have a little bit more pitching. Pretty fitting here on a pitching podcast that we end like this. I think they'll have a little bit more pitching over the Yankees in the Fall Classic. But like I said, prove me wrong. Guys, happy opening day to you. We'll see each other at the ballpark to start in the Bronx. And away we go here. This is going to be great.
It's here.
All right, that's going to do it here for
this episode. Bring your coat. Bring your coat to the Bronx tomorrow.
And then bring your raincoat on Saturday.
Yes.
Quick reminder, subscribe to our YouTube channel so you do not miss whatever we are streaming each and every week. That's going to do it for this episode. For David Cohen, for James Smythe, for our outstanding producer, Dan Work, this is Justin Shackle. We will talk to you next week on Toe in the Slab, Pitching with David Cohen, a production of John Boy Media. Happy opening day.